If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
I just heard a big bang from upstairs.
Ew.
I'm hoping the puppy didn't knock over a vase.
I didn't hear it through my headphones. I wonder if the mics picked it up.
We're big into museum putty around here, Ben.
Yeah.
Buy it by the barrel. This is what they say. They say don't get into an argument with someone who buys museum putty by the barrel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you just mash up a bunch of it and put it under all four of her paws so she is stuck?
Yeah, that is how we use the putty. Yeah, it's not on things that wobble and fall. It's a great way to just keep an eye on your pup.
You don't dog proof the house, you house proof the dog.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Like, we stuck that plastic thing that you put in power outlets. We just put that into her two nostrils and mouth. Really cured the biting.
Oh, that's weird. I thought that was the thing that keeps the pizza box from sinking into the pie.
Same, same. Yeah. Sounds like the banging has stopped. I think we're good. Who am I kidding? The banging stopped around here a long time ago.
Wow. I'm sending best wishes to your pup and to your wife who gets stuck dealing with your pup when you're down in your office recording with me.
Real talk. Yeah, she is the real MVP of Greatest Gen over the last several months.
The wives don't get enough credit.
Yeah.
They keep this thing going more than anyone.
It's really true.
We appreciate the people that set up memberships, and we appreciate the people that are getting ready to in the upcoming Max Fun Drive, but the wives, come on.
Support the show for the wives.
Let's hear it for the wives.
That's going to be the message of this year's Max Fun Drive.
That's the theme.
Going to de-emphasize us, make it more about them.
There are two capable, career-oriented, beautiful, intelligent, funny women who have to live with us.
Who really needs your support when you think about it? Us or them?
Adam, we've got some packages of cards in front of us. We opened some, but we didn't do a war, I feel like, the last time we opened these Voyager packs, right?
Yeah, because it was our first time opening them. I think we just needed to get used to their format.
I'm curious, because we both found Chakotay temporary tattoos.
Right.
Highly problematic temporary tattoos in these packs. Is that the only tattoo? Did they all come with a Chakotay tat?
I only found its scale a problem for me, Ben. Everything else about the Chakotay tattoo, 100% okay.
It's definitely sized for a child's head.
Hold still, Timmy. I'm going to appropriate you.
The kids at school will love this.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trip will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! We're going to war!
So I got two packs here. These have different labels on them. One has Janeway, Paris, and Chakotay, and the other has Kim, BLT, and Tuvok. It's red shirts versus yellow shirts. Which do you think I should open?
I have opened the yellow shirt version.
Oh, okay.
That, well, you described.
I'll open the red shirts then, and we'll see if there's any difference between the packs.
All right.
It says all cards randomly packed.
Hey, guess what? If three of the eight cards in your pack is like a fucking mail-in offer, it doesn't count.
Those don't count.
Stop it with this skybox.
All right. You ready to flip some cards, Adam? These are a little bit more subjective because, unlike the collectible card game cards, no stats printed on these. But I think we can figure out who wins based on what, right?
Think so. Let's hit it.
All right. Three, two, one.
My card is weird as hell.
Oh, yeah?
I got card number one in the series when I flip it over, but I'm going to show the camera and the viewers at home what this looks like. It doesn't have any description on the front. It's just two shots of the very first episode of Star Trek Voyager. It's Caretaker Part 1.
That looks like puzzle card. It's got like a line that goes off the edge that makes me think it connects to something.
Good eye. Yeah, this has got to be part of a larger image. So that's my card. What did you get?
Also an image from episode one. This is, it just says Strange New Worlds on the bottom of the card. And it is an image of the desert where the Kazon are hanging out in that early in the first episode.
How weird is it that we both got first episode cards?
What do we think? Who wins this? Is it a draw because it's both first episode, or...
I gotta say, I think your card is just a lot cooler just in looking at it. My card is very uninteresting because it's just mostly space.
Yeah, yours doesn't have a lot of imagery on it. I like the matte painting of the Kazon desert.
I do too.
Desert planet too.
I think that's our winner.
Okay, thank you. Let's flip over another card.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. there is no way you're going to beat me, Ben. Because I have Tuvok shooting a wide-angle phaser on the bridge from the episode Cathexis.
Oh, man. Wait, is that Tuvok or Vorik shooting that?
Well, this is Tuvok. This is the very end.
Okay. My card is an image of full Klingon BLT. Remember the episode where she's the human half and the Klingon half are disentangled with a grody Vidian hand stroking her cheek.
Oh, that is so gnarly.
It's so nasty. Ugh.
Just for shock value, I feel like that might be the winner. I thought mine was more badass.
Yours is more badass. Mine is more repellent.
I think that means a lot in card war. I think that's like the chemical warfare equivalent of card war right there.
That was a huge head-to-head. Should we do a couple more flips? Flip overs?
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1. Ooh, this also feels like a puzzle piece card. I have, again, full Klingon BLT, and then I have those kind of shitty ex-Maquis crew members getting trained by Tuvok. Also kind of framed up in a way that makes me think that this is part of the puzzle. Card 6, I guess.
I have a special card, and it is a technology card, is how it's branded itself.
Okay.
Evidently, this is one in a series about 24th century technology. This one is for Cenotaph, and this is a device that the Venori used to terminate a person's life function. So this is a suicide machine piece of technology.
It's the thing that sent Harry to the other dimension, and then somebody came back through. She was supposed to be dead.
Harry was sent to the next emanation.
Right, or the previous emanation.
The reality was it transported the dead body to an asteroid belt in the Delta Quadrant.
Well, I think yours being a killing device and mine being barely anything means you win this round.
I think that's what we're learning here. Pulling a puzzle card really puts you at a disadvantage in card war.
Yeah, can really fuck your shit up.
3, 2, 1.
Got another Strange New Worlds. It's the matte painting, I think, of the underground area that the Ocampa live in.
Oh, yeah.
Matte painting from episode 1, I guess. Ocampan Underground.
My card has a hair let out of her bun, Captain Janeway.
Oh, wow. Damn. Looking good, Cap.
I know, right? This is Eye of the Needle, episode 107. Of course, you remember this one being about the spatial anomaly that may be a wormhole.
Oh, yeah. It was like a narrow-ass wormhole.
That's right. Its opening wasn't big enough for the ship, so they would like shoot a little blast through it.
Right.
You remember?
You would have thought that would be a Q episode.
Right. It didn't work.
He's used to encountering openings that are too narrow for him.
I didn't make that up. That's all over the internet.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
For our friends of DeSoto to find.
Did people think that you made that up?
I don't know. If they did, they should know better. I'm not talking about actor dick out of school.
I'm going to call that a win by you. Because it's something and not just a picture.
That's all it takes.
Let's flip one last card over. We'll see where this thing lands. Best of five. What do you say?
Perfect.
3, 2, 1. I have a card in the Star Trek Voyager Trivia Contest series. Inside the massive living organism the USS Voyager crew mistook for a nebula, its defense system sent USS Voyager into a steep dive even further into the creature. How did they stop their descent? Was it A, vent deuterium into space, shutting down the thrusters? B, reroute main power to impulse? Or C, spread warp particles around the wound? They don't include the answer on the card because this is one of those ones that you're supposed to send your fucking answer into Skybox. And, you know, in
this
like
happened last time.
1998, they'll tell you who won.
Well, whenever you don't know the answer to a multiple choice question, you're always told to choose C, right?
Yeah. And I think
that's going to be my choice here.
The only way we can shut down all thrusters is to vent their deuterium into space. Do it.
What was your card?
In a strange coincidence, Ben, my card is the episode card for Emanations.
Oh, weird.
Which is related to the 24th Century Tech card that I played earlier.
Yeah.
It's weird. All of the cards in this pack come from early series episodes.
Yeah, same for
me. Like, none of them were spoilers for me.
Yeah.
It seems like the chances wouldn't be good that would happen.
I also think, like, 3 of the 8 cards in this pack relate to Caretaker.
You can't make cards like this until you have enough series to make them about, right? Like, I wonder when they started making them. Like, could it be that they started making these cards after season 1?
They're like 15 episodes into season 1 and they're like, we gotta make some cards.
I think this show's going places.
Well, again, you have a card that is something and not nothing. So I think you win that. And I guess that means you won the whole war.
God, that's what it takes, huh?
I had you on the ropes at the beginning there, winning the first 2.
I really expected these cards to be better.
Yeah.
What happened to the Star Trek cards?
These are not good.
Maybe we should look for better Star Trek cards.
Yeah.
I don't want to be ungrateful to the friend of DeSoto who sent us these cards. Because we definitely needed Voyager cards.
I bought them off eBay.
Oh, you bought them?
Yeah.
These cards fucking suck, Ben.
I fucked up. Hey, I would definitely like to get a suggestion from a friend of DeSoto. If somebody knows of a good series of Voyager cards out there that we could get a hold of, or has some that they want to send in, send them in.
That'd be great.
We had a temporary moratorium on sending in more cards, but we'll lift it in the case of good Voyager cards.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm into it.
All right, Adam. Are you into getting into today's episode?
We're not just here to do card war?
No. We got to talk about Star Trek Voyager Season 3, Episode 21, Before and After.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
This one begins as the POV of a patient in Six Bay. Not really sure what's happening here.
It's all black, too, right? It's like not even, we don't even get to see the POV.
It's me in a Six Bay bed, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. There's some crew people that I don't recognize. The doc has hair.
It's also a bio bed that is facing the wrong way. Like, I feel like anytime you see a wide shot of this bed in this part of Six Bay, their head is toward the back of the room.
That is a great call.
But when you see it's you're facing the way the camera always faces, which leads me to believe that the Six Bay is not a 360 degree set. There's an open wall somewhere.
Maybe the most unusual part about this scene is how kindly the doc is speaking to me / the camera.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. Maybe the hair, maybe getting the hair plugs really kind of like put some pep in his step.
Maybe that's all it takes.
Worked for Joe Biden.
We flash out of this POV to outside POV perspective, yeah, to a boy bringing a wrapped present to Grandma Cass. They went into the makeup department and pulled the old Pulaski bag out. Shot it with some air duster.
Yeah.
And pulled it over Jennifer Lean's head.
I mean, I was impressed with the old lady makeup. I was also really impressed with the rapping job that this kid did on this present.
Oh, you're a rapper. Oh, okay. You got a record contract?
Because it's a trapezoidal shape. And that feels like a very high degree of difficulty for doing wrapping paper.
This is the most science fiction part of the episode, clearly, is a preteen
doing
grasping the
professional
ability.
Professional, like Macy's checkout counter level wrapping job.
Also, it is so hard to find and give a gift to anyone now. I feel like as I get older, like it's harder and harder to do. In the 24th century, what do you get for grandma? There are a thousand things that make that prospect difficult.
I mean, in a replicator world, grandma doesn't need anything. And so I think everything is macaroni picture frame.
It's just back rub coupon book.
he made a trapezoidal back rub coupon book. The scientists said it was impossible.
I mean, that's what makes cake the only gift, right? Food is gift in the 24th century.
Unless it's Neelix, and then in which case it doesn't count.
So we got old Pulaski into theme. And on the back side of the theme, we learn that this kid is Andrew. This is Grandma Kess's grandson.
Yeah.
And the more you see Grandma Kess and the doctor together, the more I appreciated how much better the doc's hairline is than Grandma Kess. His hairpiece looks amazing.
Yeah, it does. It looks really good.
Maury's wigs don't come off, even underwater.
You know, if I didn't know, I wouldn't know.
Exactly.
And that's the mark of a good hairpiece.
Grandma Kess is just downright confused by the doctor's hairline here.
Yeah. Dr. Van Gogh, Andrew calls him.
Yeah.
And she is doing like old lady disoriented pretty effectively.
You know, while she's disoriented, this would have been a great opportunity for her to really tear into the doctor's choice of names here. I don't remember who I am or who any of these people are, but also really like more like Dr. Van, don't name yourself after someone famous from history. Give me a break, Doc. And then like her attitude could be written off as just dementia.
Have you learned nothing about like the dangers of cults of personality? Also, yeah. Famous from history for being mentally ill? Like, is that what you want to name yourself when you're the only physician aboard the ship?
I don't like it. Bad name.
It's all very confusing. We don't know why we're here. We don't know why she's old. We don't know why he has hair. We don't know who this kid is.
Now the kid scrams and runs into Captain Chakotay.
What?
Who is briefed by the doc about Kes's condition. Kes is now 9, which seems pretty old for an Okampan.
Yeah. That one guy that we met that was 12, everybody was shocked.
Yeah.
So Chakotay seems to be living his nightmare. And maybe this is all happening in Chakotay's head.
Yeah, I was ready to believe that.
Did you maybe think that this kid was related to Chakotay based on their interaction?
initially?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, that was hard to figure out at this point.
Yeah. So the interaction is confusing and weird and doesn't last long because she wakes up again.
Grandma's cold again. And then she flashes into her quarters.
Yeah. She wakes up in bed. It's dark. She's disoriented. She's no longer in medical scrubs. And she walks out. This same kid and the same lady from when she first woke up are there. She's got a picture of herself as a younger woman holding a baby but not smiling, like a, like a accidental Renaissance Madonna and Child situation.
You know, like, children have to get passport photos sometimes. And I wonder if, like, this is one of those situations where, like, yeah, galactic passport photo was the intent here.
She does not understand what is going on. And when she walks out to greet Andrew and Linus, they're not much help. I was kind of ready for old Grandma Kes to just be totally horrified by Linus's ears in this scene. Linus has nightmare ears.
Yeah, do not like them.
You're confused right now, and I'm sure that's very frightening.
I don't like them at all.
No, they're bad.
I don't like seeing them. I mean, it's enough to make you want to, like, if you're Kes, maybe stop the family line here. Just maybe not having kids is a viable alternative to having them if you're Kes.
Any chance I could maybe get Neelix's ship and go back to a part of space where there's some Okampans and, like, only reproduce with them to avoid this ear situation?
I think something happened on their way out of the sack.
If a human reproduces with an Okampan, does their baby live like 30 years?
Great question.
Or does their baby just live like an Okampan lifespan? Is it like reversion to the mean, or is it like lowest common denominator?
Well, how long do humans live in the 24th century? If we're cutting it in half, maybe.
In Star Trek, Colin Picard, he's supposed to be over 100 years old, right?
Right.
I have had enough of your stupid patronizing.
This is one of those scenes where, like, doddering old enters the scene and daughter and grandson seem to understand that there's a medical condition presenting itself here, but they are not doing a whole lot to help the situation. Like, it's strange, right? Like, my granddad had dementia before he died, and so seeing a person in Kes's condition being not treated the way that I would expect her to be was more of a shock to me than anything else.
Right.
They're kind of putting up with it.
Some mention gets made of the word morologium, which sounds a little bit like eulogium, which we have encountered before.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really go into it. And I think that also what's upsetting about this scene is that, like, we haven't jumped enough times yet to know what's going on. So it just seems like old lady who woke up disoriented later. And it's not, you don't realize that she's old lady that woke up disoriented earlier.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, the truth cuts against the emotional power that this a scene like this should have, right?
Yeah. They take her to Six Bay, and her husband comes in, Commander Tom Paris.
Who, in spite of Grandma Kes's failing health, hasn't shown up until now.
Yeah.
I thought this was amazing. Like, hey, Tom Paris, it's okay to take time off work while your wife is dealing with a with a serious medical condition.
Am I making any sense here?
As far as I know, the ship has an autopilot.
There are other people that can take the con.
Yeah. And Lindis and Paris argue about Grandma Kes's care, like, openly.
Yeah.
And Kim calls Linus sweetheart because I guess Kim and Linus are Andrew's parents.
Well, yeah. So Harry married Tom's daughter.
Yikes.
And had a baby with her.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
And Linus is like 2 years old, the way Kes was when she first got on the show.
What the fuck?
I thought we were past this.
Did the show really need to hang a lantern on this issue again?
I could have watched an entire episode about how awkward it must have been for Kim to try to make it okay that he was dating Paris's daughter. Give me a 3-episode arc about that.
A 10-episode arc. An entire season of Discovery about this.
Kim couldn't even date a hollow babe. How does he make this happen?
Something about it reminds me of being in the womb.
Get up, Harry.
Who are you?
Harry Kim. Parents must be very proud.
Who are you?
They come as a pair.
Who are you?
Harry Kim. Who else is she supposed to get chummy with? Harry Kim. And your mom? Very proud.
Who are you?
Harry Kim. Chummy, chummy. And your mom? Very proud. Harry Kim.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
And he's raising a fucking brat.
I mean, he's not that much of a brat. He can wrap the hell out of a present.
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses, I guess. But Kes gets really cold and Flash again, and we're at a birthday party for Kes. It's her 9th birthday. So now we know we're going back in time.
Right.
Neelix is in a Starfleet uniform. He's been, I don't know, given a field commission or something.
Yeah, I mean, he's a security officer now.
Yeah, he's come out of cooking retirement to bake this cake.
Right, but Neelix still isn't over the breakup because this is clearly a revenge fondant cake that he's serving to Kes on her birthday.
Yeah, yeah, fondant always photographs well.
It's filled with fudge, so it might be worth the trouble.
I hard disagree there, man.
You can just peel the fondant away. You don't have to eat it.
Except for fudge is also gross.
Oh,
it's God. It's like putting a gross thing inside a gross thing.
Some of your food opinions are just so unnecessarily dumb. Just keep them to yourself when they're that dumb. You don't like fudge? Give me a break.
I'm going to take you on Judge John Hodgman, and he's going to side with me because I know for a fact that Hodgman also thinks fudge is gross.
He'll have to recuse himself from the decision if that's the case. The one time we go on Judge John Hodgman, he won't even be on the episode. And I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
I don't think that you can find somebody that rises to the level of working as a judge that thinks that fudge isn't gross. I just think that if you're that smart and you're that wise, you understand.
But what are you waiting for? Blow out the candles.
Grandma Kes is wearing a sweater made out of a cocoa floor mat that you'd find in a 70s Volkswagen Beetle. You know what those look like?
Yeah.
They're basically baskets that have been flattened into a floor mat.
Right. You know, she's advanced in years and has kind of gotten out of the catsuit phase of her life at this point.
Do olds just want to wear itchy clothing? Is that why you see them in itchy clothing all the time?
Well, maybe it's alpaca wool and therefore very soft.
A hair shirt is a hair shirt, Ben.
That's not what a hair shirt is.
They look exactly the same to me.
Mm. I mean, if the fibers are really long, it won't be that itchy.
Your opinions are so insane. Benjamin R. Harrison does not like fudge, but enjoys itchy hair shirts.
I like a soft wool.
Not me. Get that out of here. Give me a technical garment. Give me a man-made material.
Spoken like a true Seattleite.
Grandma Kes peels away from the cake part of the party with Andrew.
Yeah. This is the first thing she did that I really understood. Yeah. Get me away from that nasty cake.
She's like, Andrew, you got to answer a couple of questions for me, starting with, how on earth did you wrap that present? I have no idea how you even do that.
Yeah.
Also, what did you get me? Because I asked for nothing.
Yeah.
I don't need anything.
What even comes in a shape like that?
Is that one of those massage coupon books?
I think it'll be worth the wait.
Do the coupons get slightly bigger over time as you... Is it like a massage a day calendar with like 6 years worth of coupons?
Sounds great.
Dr. Van Gogh has a gift even better than a massage coupon book. It is a biotemporal chamber. This is his idea for solving the temporal problem that she has described to him.
He's fucking shook when she brings this up because he's like, I invented that in my brain this morning and I haven't even told anybody about it. And she's right. Like, yeah, well, I heard you talking about it. So
what else do you know about things that are in my brain that I haven't articulated?
I kind of thought that there could have been an interesting moment in this episode where they think that there's something wrong with the doctor for a little while. Because
right.
He's had plenty of problems with his program and that could have been a thing. But yeah, everybody is focused on, okay, so Kes may actually have something going on with her, and let's start getting to work. And this is the first time we cut to an exterior of the ship in the episode since the beginning, and it's an interesting moment because it feels like every time she's jumped up until now, she's had minutes or right. a day maybe between jumps, and this kind of really indicates a passage of time that hasn't been indicated previously.
This is an amount of time that the doctor uses to build the temporal lung.
Yeah.
In Six Bay, Grandma Kes explains that she has diagnosed herself as temporal divergent, and she thinks she's moving backwards in time. But the doc thinks that she may be clairvoyant instead, and I really like this argument.
Yeah, maybe she's just a precog.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like two words meaning the same thing.
Right. Yeah. He's like, you know, she can freshen you up. Why couldn't she look into the future also?
Exactly. Later on in Kes's quarters, like part of what she's doing is research on herself. She's looking through her records and her files and stuff.
She wants to figure out where the divergence started.
And when Paris comes in, he's a little shook by seeing all of these materials out, making very certain that none of them are the tax documents that she would be likely to find were they to be living together, which they are.
What iPads are those specifically?
He reminds her of how cringy it was when she was dating Neelix, which I thought was a fun moment.
Right. And he also talks about how they got together after the year of hell.
He's like, look, we've had a lot of awkward moments together. Miriam interactions that could be construed as weird or creepy, but Kim asking us for permission to date our daughter is like, that just takes the cake, right? Nothing we could be going through could be more awkward than that.
So that is why we decided as a ship to call that the year of hell.
The many attempts that Kim made to ask us to date our daughter, known retroactively as the year of hell. Yes, I remember.
But when BLT died in that attack, I was really sad about it. I was pretty bent out of shape, and Kes really got him through the grief of losing BLT. And that was a chronoton torpedo attack from a species called the Krenim during the Year of Hell. Mm. And everybody makes eye contact with the camera at this point.
I mean, BLT died in that attack, but so did the captain. Yeah. And not to bury the lead, Joe Carey died.
The Joe Carey?
I know.
Fuck.
I mean, they're really running out of torpedo casings from the sound of it. I mean, eventually I think you just need to switch to bags, right?
Yeah, like they pack a lot more compactly, you know?
But with Trash Tidy, it dispenses a new bag right there. It makes it so much easier.
I would have assumed that Paris's capacity for love, also a casualty in that fight, but no. Kes was there to nurse his heart back to health.
Not the only reason he was sucking on that titty. They also fell in love.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Paris tells us how chronoton torpedoes work. They work how you think they would. With a name like that, you kind of get it.
Time travel.
Have you watched Star Trek before? All right.
Yeah.
No further discussion necessary.
On the walk to Six Bay to tell the doctor about their theory having to do with these torpedoes, Kes gets cold again, and out of this time, she flashes.
If my wife flashed in time every time she got chilly,
oh boy,
I would have lost touch with her years ago.
I wouldn't have known her after the first day.
I mean, every time I enter a room, I notice that she gets the shivers.
You do have that effect on a room.
On this new flash, we lose all the loaf on Kes. They're not going for subtle differences in the aging here.
This had to feel better if you're Jennifer Lean, right?
But it's long hair, Kes.
Right.
That was 6 months worth of loaf right there. They said that this is 6 months previous in time.
That's what's so interesting about the Ocampan aging, right? It's like exponential. They age very quickly in the beginning, and then they kind of plateau, but at the end...
it falls off a fucking cliff.
Once the burlap sack comes out, it's over. It's over in a hurry.
Yeah.
Quarantine of the Darwin Station must be maintained forever.
They take an iPhone photo. This is like kind of a funny moment, like the taking a picture of someone on your phone and then showing it to them immediately. Like,
yeah,
Star Trek totally invented that.
Also, hey, do you want me to take another one, Cass? It doesn't look like you're smiling here.
Yeah. Or should we just print this one? Weird. Okay. You happy with that facial expression?
Cass is able to do that thing where she acts as if she belongs for just a moment before the mood changes, and she asks Paris to take her to see the doc immediately.
She's getting better and better at like catching everyone up. This is a bit of a script problem that Star Trek encounters from time to time. Like, if somebody is jumping around in time or dimensions, how do they explain to everyone else what's going on to them and do it in a way that's not repetitive and boring for the viewers?
Right.
And she's gotten much better at this. And now in Six Bay, they are finding that she does, in fact, have a phase variance, W/R/T, her chronotons.
Do you think her age makes her a more credible patient in this moment? Because she's able to articulate what's happening to her better than she previously was.
And people aren't going like she's not an addled old woman that doesn't know where she is or what's going on.
I definitely thought that was baked in here.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, the episode implies that, but does not interrogate it at all.
No. And I mean, part of it is the doc confirms Kes's suspicion, and that's something we haven't had up until now.
Right. Yeah. We finally have some readings that can corroborate what she's saying. And that's good enough to convene a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And pretty much the entire senior staff, you know, are alive in this timeline, are brought together to talk about this situation. And what led her to this point? She's being pretty fast and loose, like telling them what happens in the future, which I thought was interesting. Like, I think in a lot of Star Trek contexts and like the going back to 1996 in this series, like they've been extremely careful about not revealing what's coming up, but she's not sweating that.
Not at all. This is a scene that is focused pretty squarely on the doctor to the exclusion of everyone else, which I thought was interesting too. Like, if you're playing who's the most interesting person at the meeting, I would have bet it would be Cass, but it's not. The doc is running this thing and blaming his own brilliant invention for the reason that Cass has become unstuck in time.
Yeah.
She's been poisoned by the chronotons.
The biotemporal chamber, when he designed that, he didn't know that she was riddled with chronotons. And so the biotemporal chamber interacted with her system in a way that was a surprise.
In a highly experimental but nonetheless brilliant attempt to stop her aging process.
The danger is revealed here, in that if Kes keeps jumping backwards, eventually she's going to jump backwards to a time that she doesn't exist. And then what? What happens then? No one knows, but I want to find out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
In order to suck the poison out of Kes's body, they need more information on the torpedo that causes the radiation.
Yeah.
So this is an unresolved problem.
So they're going to try and, like, put a field around her and prevent her next jump. They've noticed that she gets chilly every time she jumps, so that's also a thing.
What we've got is the doctor's medical Afghan here, all ready to go, which is certainly going to stop these jumps.
Mm-hmm. You can curl up in this bed with the doctor's medical pups. they'll keep you warm.
In sickbay, there is a really interesting scene next that really stuck out to me. The moment where Linus confides in Kes that she may be having some postpartum depression issues.
Yeah.
And Kes using her knowledge of the future to disabuse those feelings.
Because that baby was Andrew, and Linus does not have the same connection with Andrew that Harry Kim does.
Linus is like, I'm afraid Andrew's going to be like Marty McFly in Back to the Future 2. And Cass is like, no way. Definitely going to turn into Marty McFly from Back to the Future 1.
Worst case scenario, Marty McFly from Back to the Future 3, but let's try to maintain some optimism here.
Let's hope he's a little more popular than that. This is a hard cut to do because Kes walks out of Six Bay, and then we cut to later in Six Bay.
Right.
And usually there's an interstitial or something in between a cut like that.
Yeah.
Not the case.
It's using a cut that would normally feel jumpy and disorienting to kind of further how weird this story is, though. And
yeah.
Paris is here, and this is where she begins to jump again. And this is like the first time we kind of get to see what the jump looks like from the perspective of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like disappearing, and the doc is trying to like inject her with something to warm her up. And like Paris is reaching his hands out to try and hold on to her, but she's like phasing out of existence.
She's like inside some kind of time brig.
Yeah.
That we don't quite understand.
Yeah.
Hey, this is as good a time as any to ask this question. Do you believe their love?
Maybe I do in a weird way, but like when he comes in, like it's the partner that is like having a weird time relating to their sick partner energy. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it wasn't like falling all over himself to get physical with her or anything.
It seems like a very writerly thing to use memories of past events as grounding materials for someone else's sanity in a sci-fi show, or
right,
a way to help us as the viewer understand the intimacy between two people, because this might be one of those things where I don't talk like this in my relationship. I remember and love all of the fun adventures that me and my wife have been on, but I've never used those memories as a soothing thing.
Right.
Have you? Is that a thing that people do? Like, I would never think to, when my wife is feeling bad, go like, you remember that time we took that trip and how I was sick the whole time? Or whatever. Like,
maybe we should. Maybe what this episode is telling us is that we could be doing better.
This episode has taught me that I'm a bad husband.
Well, she flashes, despite all of their attempts to prevent that, and she flashes back to giving birth to Linus. We don't see the reproductive sac, but it is implied by Tom Paris pulling a gooey baby out of her back.
Yeah.
And this is a year of hell, baby. This is she's giving birth in media hell.
Do you think for the Ocampans, when they like go to a fancy party or whatever, there's like a plunging backline situation is like extremely suggestive for what's going on back there?
Did you catch Kes? She was sure showing a lot of back sack.
Boy, when Kes got out of the limo back first, did she even know what she was flashing?
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that robe enlargement.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins. A Couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
I've got to get that.
What now?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
A Subaru Brat-style shuttle.
Inexpensive and built to stay that way.
Is no place to birth a child, clearly.
Yeah.
Also, we need to talk, Cass, is about when your relationship is on the line and for no other subject. She says we need to talk as an introduction to the time jumping conversation, yeah, which is less threatening to me as a person in a relationship.
I want my wife to tell me if she's jumping around in time. I don't want her to tell me if it is preceded by we need to talk.
We need to talk is for one thing only.
It's the scariest three words in the English language.
Yeah. We need to talk is the scariest three words in the English
Four,
language.
Fuck. God damn it.
That's how scary those words are.
God,
you lose the ability to count them.
My mind collapses. So a very exciting shot of the shuttle returning to Voyager, like mid-firefight. And like the hallway is all fucked up and full of garbage. Neil seems to be the kind of security officer that helps people get off their shuttle when they land back on Voyager. Not up at the horseshoe firing the phasers.
This here is his morale officer training taking over. Yeah, he's there to greet.
So. Yeah, he's like complimenting their lavender colored waffle knit towel that they've swaddled their baby in.
I like the location choice as an emphasis on how bad things are, right? Like when the mess hall is a battlefield hospital,
yeah,
you know shit is bad on the ship.
You don't want to get stitched back up in a room that has ladles in it, you know?
Right. And when Kes tells Chakotay about what she's going through, Chakotay is very understandably like, nothing on this ship works. Your situation seems very important, but we don't have air on most of the decks on the ship. So
you don't just get whatever crazy medical intervention you want in the year of hell.
And Kes is like, but Chakotay, we need to talk. And this stops Chakotay cold. Because this has Seska flashbacks mm-hmm. written all over it.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the tattoo on the baby, Chakotay?
Kes gets cold again.
Yeah, and she wakes up in the tiki lounge, side schlong there. Everybody's there.
The eye just finds the side schlong
every time. BLT is even there. She's kissing on Tom.
This is a shocking moment.
Yeah. What the hell?
I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm shocked to see this.
They're a cuter couple than Tom and Cass.
Is something wrong?
It's true. We don't get much time to think about this and how fun it is.
Yeah.
Because this is the moment that the Voyager is under attack by the Krenim. And so everyone gets called back to the bridge. I would love it if Sideshlong Guy were a crew person and we just didn't know it. And this is his choice.
You see him like sitting on a bench pulling his uniform. Oh, shit.
I am so ready for that reveal.
Not a holo character. Just a man.
Just a normal human man who likes to party.
So Kes is over in a station on the bridge where BLT and the captain are working on this problem of the fact that they're getting hit with chronoton torpedoes, and they get another huge banger dropped on them, and this kills both BLT and the captain. You see their deaths in one fell boom. They get taken out.
It's incredible to think that one shot could take them both out.
You only get one shot.
Great shot, Krenim.
Yeah.
That's value for the torpedo.
They don't have a lot of time to grieve, though, because they are still under attack. And Captain Chakotay is like, hey, little help would be great. And Kes has some ideas. She's like, hey, I actually can think of something that might help, which is that... remodulating the targeting scanners or something.
The only way we can shut down all thrusters is to vent their deuterium into space. Do it.
Something, something, something. Destroy the torpedo launcher before they fire. And this works great.
Beltran's line read of fire is so great.
Fire!
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things I've ever heard him say on this show. The way he says it, I thought was a great choice.
Yeah. It favorably compares to Frakes' line read.
Mr. Worf. Fire.
And to Kirk.
Fire.
Yeah.
Kirk is one of the great fire pronouncers in all of Star Trek. He really luxuriates in that word.
Yeah.
But Beltran's line, I think, belongs in the conversation as great utterances of the word fire.
Fire!
RSVP the Krenim.
Yeah, blows the nose right off of this ship. Yeah. I thought maybe the rest of the ship survived because they cut away from it so fast.
And Kes goes down to, I guess, help in the six bay that they've turned the mess hall into.
Yeah.
But also just hang out with Tom. These scenes were so dark.
I think Chakotay's in the mess hall to get pipped. Or does he have to wait, like Kes has to wait?
He's just using that replicator... Get rid of that Mayquise pip situation.
You don't want to pip too fast after your captain dies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely want to wait till the funeral. And then you pip, right?
Do you think that they have a funeral service and the last thing is that the commander takes one of the pips off the captain and puts it on his own collar?
That feels like body desecration to me. Like, I think when you die a captain, you want to go into the torpedo with all your pips, right?
With all the pips, yeah.
I like the moment you're suggesting, though. I think that's fun.
Mm-hmm. They learn that there is one of these torpedoes, like, wedged in the ship at this point, and Kes goes on a Jefferies tube crawl to go find it. And where is Quark when you need him? Because... It's the same problem. The torpedo's just like in the ship, throbbing.
I thought this was a scene of Kes wanting to die because the last scene ends with Kes asking Paris how he's doing.
Yeah.
Which is a great question to ask 15 minutes after their partner dies.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a totally awful way on the bridge. Hey, why don't you give it some time, Kes? And rather than cringe to death at what she's done, she heads after this torpedo.
Yeah.
I thought that was not a great scene.
She has to find out what the temporal variance is of these chronoton particles, and this is what going down to the torpedo will reveal to her. I thought the torpedo was a great prop, really fun bit of design.
Probably looked like your chest did. not too long ago, huh? Did you check your chest for temporal nubbins?
Oh, man. I have had so many tweets about how I had shingles. And yes, I know I had shingles.
How about that? Twitter diagnosis.
Yeah.
So there you go. Everyone on Twitter, just keep diagnosing people.
I'm like Tarek from Flip or Flop, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly the example I was going to use.
I wouldn't have thought of it, but my wife suggested it.
Terrence from Flap Floppers. Also had chest nubbins.
Shingles still doesn't care.
And so she jumps again, and now she's like cat suit, long hair Kes, saying like, hey, I got some great information for you, Doc Holliday. You're bald.
Bald! Bald, bald!
We're not going to let that get in the way of the fact that I have some pretty important information to share with you. And if you want to convene a McLaughlin group, the rest of the crew.
Issue two.
A McLaughlin group not as interesting as you would hope it would be when attended by a time traveler who could tell everyone at the table all kinds of things about their lives. No, instead they decide to talk just about the Doc's big invention.
Yeah.
And the chronoton particles that bombard her body. And BLT comes up with an idea of rebombarding her body with anti-chronotons. This is the Star Trek solution to anything. If your body is being attacked by something, the anti-version of that is definitely what you need to inject.
Yeah, it's going to help a ton. They're going to like go do the work on this, and meanwhile, Kes is going to give them all the tea that she has on the Krenim. She's learned enough to make a big difference if they ever should run across these folks.
I was straining against the episode's insistence that Kes's problem was the main problem and not the Krenim. And this was one of those moments. I was like, great, guys, like get to the part where your ship is attacked imminently.
I don't know if we got a amount of time on this jump because it may not be that imminent, right?
Yeah.
And like they've got her in the bombardment machine, which looks suspiciously like the biotemporal chamber from earlier in the episode.
I keep my bombardment machine in the guest room bathroom in a cabinet there behind some stuff.
I've noticed that you have a coin-op bombardment machine.
I don't want it to be too easy to use all the time.
But she jumps again, and she jumps to her first day on the ship. And this, you know, you talk about opportunities to make first impressions. She is doing a bad job here.
I mean, Neelix, almost impervious to embarrassment, as long as we've known him, is actually flustered here during his job interview.
I think they got like the same costume for Kes for this moment, but she just looks so different. And I was like really surprised at how, I mean, it must just be like a combination of the wig and her face.
It really looked screen correct.
Yeah. So she's like, hey, like I know Neelix is like giving you the hard sell on letting us stay aboard the ship, but I'm jumping around in time and I have like way more important shit to tell you about chronotons.
But she doesn't have time. She flashes again.
Yeah. Now it's Teen Kes.
She's working at Ocamp and Claire's.
Trying to give somebody an ear piercing with that gun.
This is really a warning to precocious kids everywhere, right? Oh, because if you are a precocious kid with an active imagination while also traveling through time, you're the girl who cried time traveler to any adult you confide in. They're never going to believe you.
You're totally fucked.
What is this place?
We don't have time to play our guessing game right now, Kes.
And as soon as we realize this, we flash again to Kes's own birth.
And she had human ears when she was born.
I was like, is her mom Sharon Stone? But it's not Sharon Stone. It's that actor from all those Christopher Guest movies.
Oh, is it?
She played Debbie Dangle in Reno 911. It's Rachel Harris.
Whoa. God damn, I didn't recognize her. That's wild.
Yeah, I had to look her up because she looks so familiar. But yeah, Rachel Harris.
Wow. She's doing like full pregnant lady scream the entire time. So her face is hard to read there.
We can name him after your father.
Tiberius, you kidding me? No, that's the worst.
How many birthing moms do you think do the pull-up on the birthing bar during?
I wonder how much thought they gave to putting loaf on a baby.
I bet they think a lot about it.
They've done spikes on Ensign Wildman's baby, right?
Once you go spike, I think everything else is easy. And I think you use spiky baby as a way to convince the parents of subsequent babies that, this is not going to be that bad for your baby. Your baby's going to be famous and not going to have to wear spikes.
But like fetus Kes has Ocampa ears. Baby Kes does not, and then teen Kes does.
Yeah, there is a lack of ear continuity here for sure.
And then, so we see fetus Kes, we see zygote Kes, we see single cell Kes, we see cum Kes, and then it bounces.
Yeah, who knew we'd get to know her dad better than we knew him before?
Yeah.
At the Ocampan Mall. We're in her dad's sack for like a good 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's a very cummy, like, act three in this episode.
What's wild about this is that it's the scene out of the holodeck tiki bar in there.
Yeah.
It's what helps us understand what it's like. Like, it's not literally, it's sort of a figurative way to help us get it.
Yeah. But it's funny. It's, you know, it's lighthearted and it's good. It's good times, you know?
It's like a look who's talking situation.
Right. Exactly.
It's funny how time travel bounced here, right? Like, we bounced all the way back to single cell, and now we're back out and moving forward again.
Side schlong guy is there.
Speaking of bouncing.
Yeah. And so they have a little celebration for her. Welcome back to traveling through time the normal direction.
If you think about it, Worf got one of these.
I guess so,
after his travel through time. I think it's when you're on Star Trek and you travel through time, you get a cake.
It doesn't take a lot to convince Starfleet. It's like, hey, I've been on a time adventure. Could we throw a party in my honor?
Yeah.
I know that none of you have any evidence to...
Feel bad for Kim in this scene because, like, no one is told about their future selves except for Kim and how fucked up it was that he had to, like, date, marry, and then have a child with Paris and Kes's daughter.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
One of the greatest indignities visited on any Star Trek Voyager character.
You get out of here, Kim.
You fucked up. I mean, you will fuck. I mean, the tenses are confusing, but you're...
There's still time for you not to fuck this up, but...
Yeah. Go think about that somewhere. But they're like, hey, anything you can tell us about the Krenim would be great.
Yeah, that's the only information that's volunteered. And so urgent is that knowledge that Kes leaves her own party to go write that paper.
That's the episode. Did you like before and after, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like Ole, I don't like Fred, and I don't like you.
I mean, it was weird to do a time travel episode that just ignored the time paradox as a thing completely.
Yeah.
It could only ever work as an episode if it did. Like, any suggestion that a paradox were possible, I think, breaks the show.
Totally.
So taking that off the table makes it a really fun episode. And I like a high concept time travel episode.
Yeah.
I always have. I was not satisfied, though, at the end with, like, the incuriosity about their futures. You can't tell me that there weren't people who were obsessed with the idea of knowing about their futures. And I thought the depiction of a character having those feelings would be welcome, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know who you make that person.
Sounds great.
I mean, I could not resist asking and knowing, even though it's totally changeable.
Yeah.
What about you?
I really like the episode. Yeah, it's an interesting Kes-centric ep. Like, I think that as time has gone on, I've been a little bit annoyed that they haven't explored the meaning of Kes's mental abilities more. And this episode, you know, makes brief mention of that and kind of bounces back off of it. And that kind of bothered me. But aside from that, like, I think it is a very fun, like, thought experiment episode. And I thought pretty well executed given what a weird idea it is, you know?
I read a couple of reviews of this episode that mentioned it was like one of the most beloved episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
Whoa.
And I don't quite agree with that. But yeah, interesting that this could be someone's favorite.
Well, Adam, do you want to see if you agree with any of the priority one messages in the inbox?
all Priority One messages are my favorite.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first one is of a promotional nature.
Oh, damn.
The message goes like this. Are you a little bit embarrassed? You keep listening to back catalog episodes of TGG instead of focusing on the things you want to get done. What my theory presupposes is maybe we can help? Rescue Time has helped millions of people who work on computers find focus and achieve work-life balance. Our focus assistant can help make your work time feel more like being aboard the hood than working for Captain Jellicoe. And honestly, a lot of our new app was made while listening to episodes of this podcast.
Wait, so they listened to our podcast while making their app, and now they wanted people to use their app to not listen to our podcast? I don't like this.
I can definitely get with the idea of needing help focusing.
Oh, yeah.
Rescue Time seems to be a way to do that. You can find out more by going to rescuetime.com/coupon/scarves for 20% off a subscription. Rescue Time was made by Brian, who is an FOD, a longtime FOD, and the creator of Rescue Time. I might have to try this out. I've been more and more distracted during my edit days. They're taking longer and longer to do.
Yeah.
Much to the consternation of you and everyone else in the business.
Yeah.
I need to be better at turning my edits, and maybe Rescue Time can do that. Give them a try. rescuetime.com/coupon/scarves.
Yeah, we give you our full endorsement of using Rescue Time as long as it doesn't slow you down on listening to old episodes of The Greatest Generation.
Right.
Our next Priority One message is from Daniel, and it's to Joanne, and it goes like this. Happy 10th anniversary, Penguin. You're my own personal Kira Nerys, and I'll never stop being amazed that you're in my life. If you're hearing this, Dante hasn't repeated enough swear words to make us stop listening to Greatest Gen yet. Thanks, little guy. My love, let's play the world's longest, slowest, most expensive game of chess. P to E4. Wow. So Daniel has fired the first volley. His opening gambit in this chess game that is going to be played over Priority One messages with Joanne, if she takes him up on it, at the end of this message. This I can really get behind. This is the kind of P1 we live for, Adam.
This is great. I mean, this is going to be a P1 that sustains the show, really. Good stuff, Daniel.
Yeah, excellent.
Ben, our final Priority One message is from Vida Zed. It is to Rencast, and the message goes like this. Wanted to give a shout-out to Rencast, editor extraordinaire of the DeSoto Quantum Archive, a.k.a. the Greatest Gen Wiki.
Wow.
They've done an incredible job documenting the teeming mass of inside jokes and bits that have accumulated over the years, and I just wanted to say it's appreciated.
Hell yeah.
P.S. Requesting a dealer's choice selection of your rarest drops.
Wow.
Why he's there, the reasons are nil, because for some reason, Jake Sisko.
It's me, Jake.
I like this idea.
Yeah.
Lieutenant George Primman, Starfleet Security.
Hold it, toast, man!
We do have some extremely rare drops. Drops that we made for one episode only.
Something about it reminds me of being in the womb.
What up, Harry?
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Parents must be very proud.
Who are you?
They come as a pair.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Who else is she supposed to get chummy with?
Harry Kim.
And your mom?
Very proud.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Chummy.
And your mom?
Very proud.
Harry Kim.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Shout out to Rencast for maintaining the wiki, a resource that, not embarrassed to say, Adam, I don't know if this is true for you, but I have definitely used the wiki to remind myself of why we say something on the show once or twice.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah, we've come to depend on it. So thanks for all of your hard work in making that possible.
Yeah, greatestgen.fandom.com, we think, is the URL for that.
Wow, well, not everyone can make a wiki about The Greatest Generation, but anyone can buy a Priority One message.
That's true. Head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron if you're curious about doing so. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I don't know what it was about this episode, but the parade of background actors was enormous.
Yeah.
So many background actors here, and it's a great episode for those extras. The Shimodas for me, though, are going to be a couple of instances of extra failure. A couple of time code examples of this to call to your attention. I'm sure there's more, but I'm going to call your attention to two. At 1441, there's two extras crossing in front of the camera, in between the camera and our actors. And the second one walking past just has a big old smile, just like the biggest, toothiest smile. I mean, the number one rule of background acting is do not distract.
Yeah.
And I was distracted by this.
First, do no harm, I think is the...
Yeah. I like that. I definitely noted it, and I was like, well, I wonder, it's early in the episode. I wonder if there's going to be more of this. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is. At 3414, it's the battlefield hospital scene in the mess hall.
Right.
And at the very end of the scene, we just hang in this moment as a guy wobbles through the door.
And he's like holding something to his eye.
They give Wobbly Guy a good 5 minutes to present his affliction to us.
They almost spent as much time with Wobbly Guy as they did with Kes's dad's nutsack.
So I think my Shimoda for this episode is just a group Shimoda for all of the extras.
You made such a compelling case there, Adam. I'm going to join you on Extras Square.
And, wow.
They will be my drunk Shimodas for this episode as well. An episode that did not seem like it was going to be as full of background characters as this one was, and yet there they are.
Just a great population of actors in this episode. A noticeable difference.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Well, Adam, let me tell you a little bit about our next episode of Star Trek Discovery. Why don't you head to gach.biz/game and get those dice ready? Well, I tell you about Season 3, Episode 22, Real Life. The Doctor decides he should create a holographic family in order to expand himself. When B'Elanna is disgusted by its unrealistic perfectionism, she alters the program to include random events and outcomes with interesting and devastating results.
Boy, we really seem to be, as a show, in that part of the season where we're just exploring the hollow or the fake or the alternate timeline. I thought we'd be getting back to like a mission, a conventional mission. It doesn't sound like that.
Yeah.
Gonna save that for the season finale, I guess.
I guess so.
Well, Ben, I'm over at the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, checking out where our runabout is at this moment in time.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Looks like it is on square 30, four squares ahead. We've got Janeway riding her own runabout. The Janeway square would take us up to a very high row in the Game of Buttholes. I don't think there's any chance I hit that square. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm going to roll the die. Ben, I've rolled a 6, and what I didn't tell you,
yeah,
was that two squares past the Janeway square was Neelix's galley.
Oh my god.
Which means the next episode, we get to enjoy a bottle of Talaxian champagne.
Now, this is interesting because you have a tiki makeup episode that you still need to do.
Right, but there are no tiki drinks made with champagne.
I said Coco, yes, yes. And you said Coco, no, no.
I said Coco later.
And now you're going to precede that with a Talaxian champagne episode.
Are you suggesting that I shouldn't do this and I should do Coco Nono instead?
No, I think you should. And I think you should probably, whatever we roll the next week, follow up with a Tiki episode, because that'll be the final week of the Max Fun Drive. And, you know, you got to step your game up at a time like this.
I had not considered until this moment that, yeah, we're doing a Max Fun Drive episode, and it will also be a Neelix's Galley episode.
Yeah.
Good timing.
Well, in the meantime, we are really looking forward to this year's Max Fun Drive, and we hope you are too. Get your pocketbooks ready. We got to thank a lot of people. We got to thank Wendy Pretty for being the producer of this program. We got to thank Adam Ragusea for making all the original music based on the work of Dark Materia. Go check out Adam Ragusea. He's on YouTube. He's on the podcasts. He's doing great stuff. Just search his name.
I mean, hard to avoid Adam Ragusea on YouTube. I don't even have to search for him.
Yeah.
And there he is.
He's right there. We got to thank Bill Tilly, the card daddy, who runs the social media sites for us. At Greatest Trek is what you follow on Insta and Twitter. Hey, retweet one of our little audiograms if you see it pop up in your feed. Helps us find new listeners.
If you're listening to this episode the week it comes out, we're going to be in Atlanta at our second to last tour stop.
Yeah.
Really want you to come out and see us. Having a blast out on tour so far. And Atlanta's one of our favorite places, so hope to see you there on April 21st.
If it isn't sold out already, greatestgentour.com is where you go to get tickets.
And, yeah.
I would hurry right there, right now, if you're interested.
Yeah, who knows when we'll go on tour again? They get canceled so often. Really appreciating this one while it lasts.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager, and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that really pisses Jesse Thorne off because it's so perfect, and he wants to come in and kind of put random things to make it not seem so perfect.
We should record that episode right into the phone line. Like, record it into momentous occasions.
Just call 206-9844-FUN and...
Yeah.
Leave a message for Brian Fernandez.
Yeah. A message that's almost 90 minutes long.
I like it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.